Attention HR professionals. Are you tired of dealing with poor performance from your managers? Are you sick of having managers run to you for every single little problem? Would you like to build the confidence and competence of your management team? If so, then contact Boss Builders. At Boss Builders, we specialize in building up the skills and confidence of your organization's managers. We do this through our popular Driving Results on-site training programs, our signature program, the Video-Driven Boss Builder Academy, and we even license our course materials so you and your internal training staff can get those managers confident and competent. For more information on how we can help you improve the performance of your organization's managers, contact us today at www.thebossbuilders.com or at 931-221-2988.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Boss Builder Podcast, the podcast for those of you who are new to supervision, those of you in the role and struggling, and even those of you who are thinking about one day making the important transition to manager. As a manager, as the boss, one of the things you probably have already discovered is that you don't get everything you want. And most of the time, you don't get anything you need. How do you remedy this? Well, the art of negotiation is the answer. Our guest today on the Boss Builder Podcast is Susan Bork. She is the principal of BorkWorks. She's an expert in the art and skill of negotiation. Susan's going to share some of her best techniques with you. She's going to give you some practical advice. This is a good one to sit down and take some notes for. And once you have learned it, put it into practice immediately. At the end, she'll give you some contact information where you can actually contract with her to learn through one of her seminars on how to negotiate more effectively. So, with no further delay, let's meet our special guest, Susan Bork. Susan Bork, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mac. I'm very pleased to be here.
I'm really glad you could be here, too. The topic that we're going to be talking about today is negotiation. I think it's a topic that a lot of folks would benefit from, but specifically our audience, which tends to be HR professionals and managers. So before we get into the questions I have for you, Susan, I was hoping you could share something about your background with us and what drew you to this really, really interesting field.
Thank you, Mac. I've always been interested in negotiations, and as in-house counsel for National Geographic Society, and before that, working for CBS, I really found that it was very important for people in business to be able to negotiate effectively. I saw it in terms of being able to negotiate on behalf of the organizations we worked for, but also I saw the importance to be able to negotiate effectively in order to advocate for yourself or your department. One of the things I did when I first joined the television division at National Geographic was to create a negotiation skills seminar for staff. It did two things. One is it actually gave people skills they were looking for because many people are insecure about their negotiating skills, even if they've been doing a fair amount of it. The second thing is it made me as new in-house counsel a lot less scary to people. And they saw what value me and my department could bring to them as internal clients.
Well, let's talk about the value of teaching this. So I think maybe most people would agree that we negotiate a lot. If we go buy a new car, we negotiate. Even if we're trying to figure out where to take the family on a vacation, we're negotiating. So what's the value of having to teach a person to do that thing that we probably do by second nature?
Well, for one thing, a lot of people are actually very insecure about their negotiation skills. They do it, you're right, but they don't always feel that they're doing it effectively. Many times I say to people, do you ever negotiate anything? And the answer is always yes, right? And then I say, do you ever feel like you left something on the table? And I get a lot of knowing nods. So being able to approach a negotiation in a strategic way, that can make a real difference, both in terms of how effective you are, as well as how satisfied you become with the results.
Well then, so this is, I'm thinking about negotiation as a life skill, something that we have to do every 4 or 5 years when we buy a new car. But you are bringing negotiation skills training into organizations. What's the value of that?
So there are several different values to having negotiation skills training in an organization. Let me start that again. There are many good reasons to train employees in negotiation skills. And this is a benefit for the organization because when people recognize opportunities to negotiate, they're then able to take advantage of them on behalf of the organization or on behalf of their division or on behalf of themselves. There are ways then that when they approach a negotiation strategically, they're going to be effective in that relationship and in that negotiation, and that's going to make things just move smoothly within the organization. Finally, the more people who've been trained in negotiation skills in an organization, the more people who will share a common vocabulary so that they can talk about negotiations effectively. If any of your listeners have done something like crucial conversations or other communication skills like that, you understand the value of having a common vocabulary. It means that there are fewer misunderstandings and people are communicating more efficiently.
Well, if we're bringing this to an organization, is there a particular level of employee that would benefit more than another in learning how to negotiate?
I think all employees benefit from learning how to negotiate because we're negotiating all the time, every day. I like to say that an opportunity to negotiate occurs whenever somebody asks you to do something or whenever you ask somebody to do something. Now, I'm quick to add that you don't have to take every request and negotiate it. All too often, though, in the rush of work, we tend to feel that when we're asked about to do something or a request is made of us or we're making a request of somebody else, the answer is yes or no. They'll do it or they won't. However, when people ask some more questions about what's being asked, you can get more information and you can fit it into the process more effectively. So, for example, manager comes to me as an employee and says, I need this report. The answer is certainly yes, I'll give you the report. And I also need to know, is that priority for delivery higher than the report that I'm already due to give you? Because I can work on one or the other first, and I want to make sure I'm working on the right one first. So being able to ask questions, and which is in effect a big element of negotiations, is also a way to help make sure that everybody understands and is on the same page with what needs to get done.
Well, even that example you just gave is basically, in other words, that employee is telling their manager, I don't have time to do that right now. But since that option's not always on the table, it sounds like they're making the manager make that decision. Sounds like it would be something that would be pretty useful to have.
I think of it as a collaborative process. It's not throwing it back on the manager. It's simply saying, you know, there's a limited amount of time. There are two or three projects that I need to get done in that amount of time. And what I want to make sure is that I'm getting the most important one done first.
Well, that would be an employee I would really value. It's them thinking strategically. So on this, the training of negotiation skills, is there maybe a level in an organization of people that really need this training, but would swear up and down they don't need it?
Well, isn't that true, right, of everybody? The people who need something, some kind of training or coaching the most are the ones who are often the last to realize that. I think that rather than looking at saying, oh, this person really needs this, I think you want to look at it as a soft skill that all your people need in an organization. And they need it at all levels. I think that people in management positions, you know, if you want to do triage, where do we start? I'd start at your upper and middle managers, because they're going to be able to have an influence both above and below themselves. If you're going to look at specific departments, your bottom line effect is going to be mostly on departments that have outward facing engagement responsibility. So if you've got a group that is negotiating with some kind of vendors, you want to make sure they have strong negotiation skills. So those are sort of the two ways I'd look at it when you're looking at how to build it out.
Okay. So basically, if you are getting a paycheck and you have a pulse, you should go through training. It's just going to be the when and who goes first that's probably going to be the most valuable. So if we are going to be doing negotiation skills training, you've already made a pretty good case that it's going to be very useful in just interactions with fellow coworkers and maybe vendors. But a lot of our listeners work in companies where they are concerned with employee engagement. They go to great lengths to measure and analyze it. Is the learning of negotiation skills a contributing fact to a positive organizational culture? And then, in addition to that, employee engagement, that level of commitment?
I think negotiation skills is a great way to improve employee engagement. And the reason is because it works this way. You're giving people, you're doing learning and development that enables people to do their job better. So that's important, because if people can perform better and excel in their positions, they're going to be more committed and feel more autonomy doing them. That's one big plus. A second big plus is that negotiation skills are things you can use outside of work. So here you're pulling an employee away from their day-to-day to give them some kind of skills to help them better in their job, but they're also going to be learning skills that are going to enable them to be more effective outside of work. So then for them, they're sort of getting two for one. For this time they're spending, they're getting double benefit. And I think that improves employee engagement.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. How many hours of your day are wasted by managers calling with personal problems they really should be able to handle on their own? Why not give them a copy of the Essential HR Handbook? The newly revised and updated 10th anniversary edition of this bestseller is jam-packed with tools, checklists, sample forms, and timely tips to guide you through the maze of HR issues in today's complex business environment. So, buy a copy of the Essential HR Handbook for each of your managers today, and keep a copy on your own desk too. And now, back to the show.
Well, and I think we can really associate a cost with high engagement and then a loss with low engagement. So this would be one, and I'll be honest with you here, I've never even thought about negotiation and negotiation training as being a contributing factor. Because I do have a lot of our customers that are very concerned with engagement. So this is an added bonus, I guess, if you look at it that way. So I'm going to go back to your background a little bit, because I'm guessing you have negotiated a whole lot more than I ever have. And so since you've done it a lot, what type of negotiations do you find to be the most challenging?
I think often the negotiations that I find most challenging and other people find most challenging are where they're very highly constrained, or where people feel insecure in the situation. And the challenge in each of those is a little different. When you have a situation that you feel is highly constrained, it's all about the money, for example. Trying to figure out what other elements can enlarge the variables is really important. It requires a lot of creativity, and creative problem solving is an important soft skill for managers and employees as well. So you need to help people learn to exercise that. It may be creative problem solving in the form of enlarging the pie, finding things outside the initial constraints that are still important to the parties. It may be reframing. As you begin to understand what your counterpart needs and wants, you can frame things in a way that is less constraining versus more limiting. You can also begin, when people are insecure, help them perceive things in a different way. For example, I see negotiations as a problem-solving process. The natural outcome of a problem-solving process, or I'd say the natural process, is collaboration. I mean, the way you solve a problem when there are people in the room is everybody has to help figure out what the solution is. So when you move the interaction from a competitive one to a collaborative one, then people will begin to feel a little more secure or a little less insecure. And you can begin to move forward to looking beyond what appears to be a highly constrained situation or a situation where people are very unsure of themselves, and engage them in the process in a constructive way.
Well, a lot of the guests that we get on the podcast, they are experts in mindfulness, which, is really taking time to just shut everything off and focus on the moment. It seems like if you weren't doing something like that, you could
at least an unskilled negotiator like myself would probably get dragged down a lot of rabbit holes and probably start fighting harder for my position. So it seems like for you, focusing and being in the moment is probably one of the key skill sets, because it's not like you're going to get called in, I guess, to do an easy negotiation, right?
You're right about that. I think that mindfulness can be very helpful. In the Harvard program on negotiation, some of the authors, one of the authors there talks about going to the balcony, that when you're in a highly charged situation in a negotiation, you want to try and step back so that you can get the whole picture. And mindfulness skills can help you do that. You become aware of your body, you become aware of your, you know, what's going on inside of you, and you take a moment to register that, and then that gives you that space to step back a little bit and figure out how to respond in the situation rather than react to the situation.
Well, I guess keeping emotion in check would be key. Well, I'm going to ask you kind of an odd question. So when I was in the Navy years and years and years ago, I was a dental assistant, and I found myself, when I would talk to people, the first thing I would do is I would look at their teeth. I know it sounds a little weird, but it's because I was immersed in it. All day long, I was looking at people's faces and in their mouth. So I want to ask you, if do you kind of go through life, Susan, and sort of spot opportunities to negotiate and use those skills? And I'm asking that for another reason, too. And I had mentioned this to you when we first met, that I had worked on a project years ago, and the contractor, they were looking for negotiators, and I was helping to manage it. And I had more problems dealing with skilled negotiators who could not work with each other, who complained about the hotels, that I thought, wait a minute, I thought you guys were the experts at this. I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm having to sort all this nonsense out. So, long way to ask the question, do you kind of go through life looking at opportunities to practice these skills?
I think it is, because it's a skill, which is exactly what you've pointed out, it is important to practice it. Many people say, oh, you know, you're either a good, right, you're born a good negotiator or not, just like you're born to be a good artist or not. And in fact, when you really look at it, you can develop these skills. If you want to learn how to draw, you need to take classes, have a good teacher, and most of all, you need to practice. If you want to learn how to play an instrument, you need to take lessons, you know, have a good teacher or coach, right, to learn a sport, and you have to practice. Now, does that mean that if you do that practice, you'll become, you know, a concert musician, you'll become an Olympic athlete? No, right? But you can certainly become more than competent.
Right.
So the key thing is to practice, and I look for those opportunities. And the way I teach negotiations, I really want people to see it as something that does weave throughout their lives. And I emphasize that, like anything else, you don't start practicing a negotiation, the skills I'm teaching, or you don't start practicing that when you're going in for your request to get, you know, when you're advocating for yourself for a big promotion, right? That's not when you start practicing.
Right. Well, you mentioned something about the way that you teach it. And so I want to ask you this too. You know, so some people would say, like I've heard of interest-based negotiation. And then, I fly a lot. So you dig into the airplane magazine, and there's always the insert from the Chester Karras thing. And he's got a photo of him probably 70 years ago. He's there. And the tagline says, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. So I suspect he's probably got a flavor. Is there a particular discipline to this that you teach, Susan, or is this a collection of techniques that you've just sort of pieced together over time?
Well, it's a little bit of both. And I think that what I focus on doing is coming up with a structure that I think can be easy for people to grasp quickly. You know, when you only have one day, and that's not a full day, right? You have maybe 7 hours of people's time, and then there are breaks and they're still checking their email. So when you don't have a lot of time, you want to provide information that people can grab hold of and integrate and then begin to use. And the way they begin to use it when I teach is I have scenarios. So I have people have situations where they can actually practice negotiations during the day. I think that's really important. Now, to make things easier for everybody, I use pre-existing scenarios, and some of the best come from the Harvard program on negotiation. So I've got proven materials that have been researched and shown to be effective in teaching, being good examples for practicing negotiation skills. I have a structure that I think is easy for people to access. And I have things that I think are fun. I mean, if the recommendations on my LinkedIn profile are any indication, I'm doing a good job. And what I do also is get feedback after every time I teach. And I use that to build on what I know. I'm constantly adjusting my presentations for my audience, but also based on what's been effective, in other presentations. And I start moving. The change in the last 3 years from where I was 3 years ago to where I am now, I'm really pleased with it because I think that I've got a program now that's, very strong.
Good. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to tell us where we can reach out to you for some training when we're done. So keep that in mind, audience, because I think you're going to really benefit. So let's talk about something else. All right. So you've mentioned a couple times win-win, and then I mentioned, different styles of negotiation. So is there a difference in somebody who is trying to solve a problem and somebody who's in it for a win-win? Is there a different methodology? Because it seems like the scenario is going to be a little different.
I think there's a subtle difference. They're very similar, and there's nothing wrong with win-win. To me, that's more about each participant getting as much as possible without undue reduction to the other party. It's more still focused on yourself, but taking the other party into account. For me, problem-solving negotiation is about both the process and the result. When you're working on solving a problem, both parties have to pull in the same direction. And to me, a really good solution is one where resources are utilized with minimal waste. So, if you can give your counterpart something that makes them 100% happy and it costs you little or nothing, I would say do that. By the same token, and at the same time, you're looking for those things that your counterpart can give you that will cost them very little and be of real substantial benefit to you. And to me, then you're getting this efficient allocation of resources. And I find that to be a very beautiful solution at the end of the day.
Well, even the term that you use, an efficient allocation of resources, I love that, because what you're basically saying is this one thing that's super important to me that seems pretty pitiful to you is being identified as what it really ought to be. It's a commodity. And then what we're doing is we're using resources. It sounds like you've taken the emotion out of it, which at least from my perspective, seems like a pretty good idea.
Well, it would be nice. I always say at one point in my presentations, negotiation would be really easy if you didn't have other people.
And so would management for that matter. But that won't happen.
As with management, you can't take emotion out of it, nor can you really control your emotions. All right. What you can is be aware of them and work on not letting your emotions control your behavior, right? You can separate your behavior from your emotions. That's the responding versus reacting. And I think you want to be able to acknowledge, though, the role that emotions play when you're negotiating. Understanding where bias fits in is incredibly helpful because it'll help you frame what you're saying in a way that your counterpart is going to be able to hear it more effectively.
Well, this is assuming that both people in the negotiation are going to act like reasonable human beings. But what do you do when you're dealing with that impossible person?
It's a challenge. One thing to know is that a person who's impossible, that I find impossible, other people might not find impossible, which is reassuring. I find sometimes getting that big picture, right? But I also feel it's incredibly important to exercise a great deal of empathy. You've got to be empathetic to people, and you really need to understand where they're coming from and what's important to them and how they understand the problem. Because really, that is crucial. I understand the problem. It's obvious. Well, the fact of the matter is you understand the problem and it's obvious to you. And we just may not be on the same page. I'm never going to get you to listen to me until you really feel that I'm listening to and hearing you. So the most important thing I can do in a negotiation is focus on you and really learn and focus with the intent, with the goal of understanding where you're coming from and what's important to you and how you perceive the situation. That's going to come into play in two ways. One is, if you feel I'm that interested in you and I'm making an authentic effort, then that's going to reassure you that your interests are going to be an important part of the negotiation. Once that happens, once you get that sort of personal shift with the other person, then they will naturally be more inclined to want to, you know, accommodate, not give in, but you know, find some way to recognize and address your interests as well.
Well, I know that one of the challenges that all of our listeners face is that I don't think anybody who tunes into my podcasts are the ultimate supreme decision maker in any organization. So that would suggest to me that almost everybody at one point in time is going to operate going into a negotiation with less positional power. Does power factor into negotiation from your experience?
Certainly power factors into negotiations. I think, though, it's a question of perceived power. And people often think they have more or less leverage than they actually have in a situation. It's a question of framing it. So, for example, account execs may know that they have a manager who, you know, is so anxious about losing the sale that if a client calls the manager directly, they'll easily get a 10% discount. What those account execs need to do is understand that there's sort of two negotiations that are going on. One is their negotiation with the client, and a second is their negotiation with their back table, in this case, the manager. So they want to make sure they understand where the manager's coming from and that the manager understands what they're doing in the negotiation. They may decide that, in fact, the account execs will take it so far, and then, you know, the call can be made to the manager and the manager closes it at a discount. But instead of being at a discount, you know, the salespeople were trying to achieve and had fully negotiated, so it then goes below kind of their financial targets. It can be a discount that takes everybody to those targets. Or if the manager understands what's going on, then the manager may well be able to be comfortable responding to a client call and say, you know, I know what my team's been doing. I'm very comfortable with where they are in this negotiation. And, you know, I feel that they've worked with you to come up with a full and fair price for what we're talking about.
Well, I think that would be a really good solution. And that team would really feel like the manager had their back. So I think that's great. Well, I've got one more question for you, and maybe this is a good one to end on. Susan, if you could give somebody out there one piece of negotiating advice, what would that be?
Aside from contacting
you to teach them how to do it the right way.
Actually, my recommendation is to really listen to your counterpart, because the seed of the solution rests in understanding what that party needs. As I said before, if someone feels that you understand and respect their needs, they're much more open to understanding your interests and look for constructive ways to work together.
Well, with that, how can my audience reach out to you to get training in this really important, I'm going to go ahead and call it a life skill? How can they find you? How can they reach you?
They can reach me on my website, which is workworks.com. I think they can find a link to that with this podcast. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. So when you're looking for BorkWorks, it's B as in boy, BorkWorks.com.
Great. Well, if you are listening to this podcast, I'm going to highly suggest you, maybe I should try to negotiate with you, but I've not had Susan train me yet. So I'm going to use my power as the host and tell you, call her, check out her stuff, because I think this is something that you definitely benefit from. Susan, thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy day to be on the show with us.
Mac, I'm glad to talk to you. I'm very glad to be able to reach the people who listen to your podcast. The other guests I've heard on your podcast are really set a very high standard. And I appreciate the fact that you feel that I've also met that and given good information to your audience.
Yes. Yes. And yes, Susan, you've been great. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, thanks for taking the time to listen to another episode of the Boss Builder Podcast. You know, if you're listening to these as you are commuting to and from work, I would highly recommend you listen again when you get home just so you can take some notes. We do our best to get you great information, and sometimes if you're like me, you got to write the stuff down. On another note, for your further development, if you work for an organization and you think that it would be valuable to partner with us, which I think is a good idea, we invite you to check us out online at thebossbuilders.com. We have three options: our signature driving results on-site workshop, which our trainers come out and deliver for you. We also have our very popular Boss Builder Academy, which is video-driven. And we also offer the option of having your organization license our training materials so that your trainers can go ahead and deliver them on site. If you're listening to our podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher, the other thing we'd appreciate is if you could just take a moment and leave us a brief, positive, of course, review. That would really help us out a great deal. And refer this podcast to anybody you know that you think could benefit from it. Until the next time we meet, get out there, boss up, boss on, and more importantly, make a commitment to being the boss at being a great boss. Goodbye.